Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. You know, you need to consider all kinds of things. When you garden, you look at soil type, climate change. What about new technologies? Today on Garden Talk, we'll take a look at how we've changed our gardening practices and what the future may hold with our guest, horticulturist, TV host, disabilities activist Mark Lane has a new book out. It's called The Future of Gardens, and we're going to talk with him about the book and take a look at the future of gardens. And I'm wondering, how have your gardening practices, how have they changed in the last decade or so? Are you concerned with changes in climate and how it's going to affect your garden? Are you interested in helping to design maybe an accessible garden? I know Mark does a lot of garden design work. Love to hear from you. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Mark Lane, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us. And you're sitting at home in the UK, if I'm not mistaken.
You're absolutely right, Larry, and thank you so much for having me.
You know, here in the U.S., we have national days. Every day there seems to be a national day. And today, turns out, happens to be National Knockout Rose Day. It always comes the Friday before our Mother's Day.
Ah, gotcha, gotcha.
Are you a knockout rose guy or not?
I've got a love-hate relationship with roses, I've got to admit.
I think you start to talk and chill. What's your question?
When I was a kid, you know, my grandmother used to make us go out there and pick off all the green fly and black fly and pick up all the black spotted leaves. So I've sort of got this hate relationship with them. But I do love roses to look at.
You know, at the start of your book, you talk about how, you know, your life and how you got interested. And I thought it was fascinating. Talk about how you got involved in gardening.
Next week on
Oh, we're having a few technical difficulties here, Mark. So I think we'll get that. I'm not hearing you now, so we'll get it straightened out in just a minute here. Mark Lane, our guest, the author of The Future of Gardens, and The Future of Gardens is the official title of the book. And in it, he, of course, talks about a lot of the work that's going on around the world to take advantage of technology and then with an eye to climate change and a lot of other things. And I think we've got him back. Are you there, Mark?
Yeah, Larry.
Okay, good. Now, let's talk about how you got involved, a little more about how you got involved in gardening, because you started way back.
I did. I think like most people, actually, who love gardening, it was because of my grandparents. My grandfather on my father's side used to love growing vegetables. So at the end of the garden, there was a huge vegetable patch. And my grandmother was a flower arranger. So she taught me, when I was probably about sort of 5 or 6, the importance of sort of shape, colour, form, texture, scent, and all of that, and how to put it all together. And then, as I just mentioned, on my mother's side, the garden was just full of roses. So that's where that love-hate relationship came from. But, my grandparents taught me, you know, even now when I'm doing stuff on TV or I'm writing in books, there's always that lovely little memory that I have. And I think that's what gardening is. It's those wonderful memories that you have over the years. And also, you know, that whole idea that actually gardening doesn't discriminate on anything. You can be there out there on your own gardening. You could be there with a group. And just being out there with your grandparents, I think, is a very special moment.
I would definitely agree with that. What drove you to write a book about the future of gardens?
That's a very good question. I was approached by the publishers. So the publishers have done this wonderful series called The Future Of, and it includes many, many very varied topics from Egyptology to the future of the novel, etc. I'd always been fascinated about technology and how that sort of incorporates into gardening and horticulture in general. So when they approached me, I was like, oh, yes, I know exactly what sort of thing I want to write about. And of course, I'm a huge sci-fi fan. So bringing all of that together was a wonderful thing to do. And hopefully it's come out in a book which people will enjoy.
I definitely think they will. I certainly enjoyed reading it. And your research, you know, England, the UK, I'm thinking back now here about 10, 12 years. I along with a bunch of really fine gardeners who listened to Wisconsin Public Radio, we visited England, and we saw the Hampton Court Garden Show, and we visited gardens, all Ham House, Great Dixter, I'm trying to remember, Sissinghurst, Canterbury, Cathedral, Old Buckhurst, Goodenstone Park Gardens, some community gardens, and a lot of private gardens. And I tell you, gardeners have it together in England. But
we are a nation of gardeners. I think we always have been, and I just think that there are some incredible examples here in the UK, and it's. I find it fascinating now because obviously being able to go into gardens for TV and being there when, you know, the public aren't around or when there's not a lot of masses, I feel very privileged to be able to do that. But also, it's fascinating to talk to the head gardeners as well to see how they're actually having to change sort of historic gardening because of the changing climate. So it's how they're having to adapt now because they're having to. But we are a nation of gardeners, and I think that's what's so special really about the UK. Whether you're in the south or way up north in Scotland and beyond, you'll always find a garden.
And you went beyond the UK, though, in your research. You did a lot of research, which I found really interesting, on what's going on around the world. Were you surprised by what you found?
Not really. I mean, I sort of know that people in horticulture generally, with a capital H, are very inquisitive types of people. And they're very glued on and clued on about climate, about sustainability and biodiversity. And, you know, as gardeners anyway, if we're outside the whole time, we notice the changes in the weather, we notice the changes in the soil. So it doesn't really matter where you are in the world, you know, everyone's having to grow stuff and adapt stuff considering what their climate is actually like. So, no, it didn't really surprise me. But I think the thing that did surprise me the most was beyond this planet and going into space and Mars and what's being done there is very, very fascinating. But I think there is that overarching belief that we as gardeners can make a difference. And whether it's small steps or whether it's large steps, when you put them all together, they can make a very big, large difference to the world in terms of climate change and resilient planting. So, I think it's I think it's wonderful to see that, you know, places in Australia, in Africa, in America, in China, wherever you go, there's always some research somewhere that is looking into all of this. And I think that's important because we have to, as a worldwide people, we have to do that.
You quoted William Kent in the foreword of your book, and you said garden, who said garden as though you'll live forever. What's behind that? Why did you want to include that?
I wanted to include that because, A, I think we have been gardening forever. But the whole notion of forever, I think, is a very interesting one, especially when it comes to gardening and even garden design. And I actually mentioned in the book that as a garden designer, many people have said to me that you're creating the sort of living legacies. And I never really thought of my design work as being that. So in that sense, you know, your designs and the planting will live on forever, unless, of course, someone comes in with a bulldozer and chops it all up and starts all over again. Yeah. And I think that is what's so special about creating sort of outdoor spaces in any part of the world, is that fact that it can be there for a very long time. And, you know, gardens never sit still. They're always constantly changing. And so because of that, that notion of forever is apt, because the gardens and gardening will always continue no matter what. So that forever notion, I think, is hopefully one that sort of stands out throughout the book, really.
Talking today with Mark Lane, he is the author of The Future of Gardens, and talking with him about the book and about gardens. And you may have a garden, a flower question, or maybe a question about the role of gardens in the future. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email the email address talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. You talk about AI in the book today, artificial intelligence. What are some ways AI is being used today in gardening? We've lost some sound again. So we're going to... Hold on, Mark, if you can hear me. We're having some difficulties for some reason today with our sound. Usually things work pretty well here on Garden Talk. Mark Lane, our guest, as we talk with him about the future of gardening. And there's a lot in his book. He talks about smart plant and garden tags. Those are a couple of the apps that he talks about. And I'm not sure if he's hearing me. Are you hearing me now, Mark? I'm seeing him, but I'm not knowing if he's hearing me.
I can hear you, Larry, but I've just been informed that our Zoom link is going to be ending shortly. So I'm going to be sent a new link.
All right. Well, in the meantime, let's just keep talking.
Yes, exactly. Why not?
Why not? Live radio, that's how it works. Do you ever run into things like this as well? No, let's not get into that. You talk about AI in your book, and let's talk about some of the ways AI is used today in gardening.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think whenever you hear the words AI, people, you know, sort of think of the worst sort of situations, because, you know, who's policing it? Where is that information actually coming from? But when you actually think about AI and the fact that it's a whole load of algorithms that we never see sort of going off into the ether that come up with all of these incredible pieces of information, I think personally, from a gardening point of view, having AI as an assistant is actually a very positive thing. I think it's going to help a lot of people, a lot of gardeners. I think it's going to help the way that we sort of address what we grow, whether it's produce or whether it's ornamentals. And I think it's just one of those things whereby we have to sort of take it carefully. And I think it always comes down to choice at the end of the day. It's a bit like when, you know, I remember when the internet suddenly sort of became very large and everyone panicked about the internet and worried about security and everything else. I think it's exactly the same with AI. It's that same sort of scare moment where a new piece of technology comes through and everyone starts to panic. But actually, in the long term, I think it's going to be a good thing. And also, we've got to remember that actually quite a lot of stuff that we already use in the garden, whether that's from smart irrigation systems or whether it's through sort of soil sensors, already use AI. They already use this software already. So, you know, we shouldn't be scared of it. It's something that we should just love. And I think it's just going to get better as the years go on. But I am still concerned, and this comes back from when I used to be a publisher, who is going to be policing that information? And is that information going to be correct? Because obviously, you know, if you're dealing with living plants and you're given some information and that's the information given to you and you believe it's right, and you then start feeding your plant, watering or whatever, and it's completely wrong, then of course your living plant is going to die. So that information, wherever that comes from, has somehow got to be policed. And how that's done, I don't think anyone really knows that at the moment. But, you know, I still think it's a good thing to happen. And it is already there. It's already in gardening products already.
It is indeed. I have one. I'm just looking at my phone now. I have one that you mentioned, as a matter of fact. It's called Garden Tags.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, you know, I mean, I mentioned this in the book, you know, when I was a kid, you know, we didn't have mobile phones. We didn't have these devices that we could just sort of press a button and get all this information. And yet now we do. We have them, you know, our phones are our life, and simple apps make life easier. And if it means that, you know, just by pressing a button or taking a photograph or something, and those AI algorithms doing what they need to do can give you that information almost instantly, I only see that as a positive. So I think it's a good thing to have. It's just whether or not everybody else will think it's a good thing as things progress, I suppose.
Mark Lane, our guest today, as we talk with him about the future of gardens, you can join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on WPR News. Great to have you along for Garden Talk today. Larry Mueller here visiting to begin the show with Mark Lane, and he's written a new book. It's titled The Future of Gardens, and looking forward to talking more with him as we move along. And you can join in with your own questions. What do you want to know about technology in the garden, or do you have a garden question? Give a call. The number's 800-642-1234. You could email to talk@WPR.org. And quick note, following Mark's visit, we'll be talking with Susan Carpenter, the native plant garden curator at the Arboretum, the UW-Madison Arboretum, and she'll have some updates on their plant sale, what's blooming in the Arboretum right now. And I bet the lilacs are blooming, among other things. Oh, gosh. Well, you talk a lot about AI in the book, and we've talked about what other technology is going to be important for gardeners, Mark?
Well, obviously, you know, both Wisconsin and here in the UK, and I know the rest around the world, everyone's being affected by climate change. So we are seeing, you know, more rain, we're seeing hotter summers. So the sort of technology that we'll be seeing will be very much down the sort of smart gardening route. So that's very much about smart irrigation systems. So there's much more less waste when it comes to water, of course, because water is a very precious source. Down to sort of collecting rainwater as well, sort of more efficiently as well. And also things like sensors. So sensors that can go into the soil or even onto the plants themselves, which will actually tell you how a plant is doing, whether it's surviving and loving its life, or whether or not it needs to be fed with a particular fertilizer, or the soil needs to be improved in some way. And I think, you know, that sort of technology, which is already here, I think is a great help. But also, you know, one step further to that is actually sort of looking at the plants themselves, and then also seeing how plants themselves can be used as biosensors. So those biosensors will then give us the information that we actually need. And I think that area is extremely interesting, because obviously we're not reliant on a little chip or plastic, which has to sort of hold together some kind of irrigation system or whatever it might be. You're just reliant on the plants. And that's, I think, is really important. And of course, as we notice these hotter summers and, of course, these wetter winters, we're going to have to adapt our type of plants that we're going to grow as well. And I think that's where sort of plant breeding is going to sort of really take a new sort of stand into the future, because with, especially with things like AI will be able to start be seeing whether a particular strain or a particular cultivar is going to do very well in certain areas because of excess heat or excess water. So we'll start to see, I think, sort of more interesting plants coming through, which will probably be quite resilient. They'll be sort of based a lot on native plants, because we know that native plants are more resilient than the more sort of tropical and hybridized plants that we see so much in gardens. And so because of that, we're going to have to sort of see ways in which we can improve these plants. And that's where I think this AI technology will really help that. Then, of course, you know, you can go sort of one step further. And I think, you know, we've got AI. So I think the next stage will be something like augmented reality. So whether that means, you know, sitting outside in your deck chair or on your knees when you're gardening, wearing some goggles, it will give you another way of looking at a plant, or looking at your border or your pots or your containers, because it will be able to overlay information. You'll be able to do it in real time. You'll be able to see the pros and the cons for doing things in different ways. And I think that is a fascinating area because it's going to open up the way that we look at plants and the way we look at our own gardens in a very different light. But of course, again, you know, it comes back to what I said right at the beginning, it will always come down to choice. You know, we will have to decide whether or not we want to use that augmented reality, or whether we want to use the information that the augmented reality gives us. And then, you know, there are very exciting things that are going on because of land scarcity. So things like vertical gardening. We're even seeing sort of vertical gardening systems coming through into the domestic market. And I think that's really interesting, because also you can look at hydroponics, you look at aeroponics as well. So it gets away from that sort of having to rely on soil, but being able to grow plants that are both productive, are going to look great, and give you something, you know, that you can eat and be very sort of nutritious as well. So there's lots of things going on in the background, but lots of things that are currently already here. And I hope that throughout the book, it actually shows the future of gardens in a positive light. It's not all doom and gloom, despite the changing climate and us having to be adaptable and resilient, because, you know, there is hope. And it almost goes back to that lovely David Attenborough clip that I heard earlier, just a minute ago, on your station, where he said, you know, the ocean will be able to bounce back. And I think that's very true when it comes to gardens. It might take a bit longer, but I think they will be able to bounce back. And, you know, who knows? You know, if we get to the point where we all suddenly decide to leave this planet and go further afield, wouldn't it be lovely to think that the future of the planet will be covered in greenery because nature has taken it back?
Yeah. Well, we've seen kind of situations like that. I was thinking about areas of the world where we had a nuclear breakdown, and that area had to be, you know, eliminated by, you know, people couldn't be there.
Yeah.
And nature just kind of took off.
I know. See, that's what I think is very heartwarming, actually, when you see sort of whether it's a dilapidated building or whether it's a site like you just mentioned, Larry, the fact that nature is resilient, and I think it does always bounce back, even after a nuclear fallout. But And I think that's a lovely thought to have, in the sense that even if us as stewards of the land, because let's face it, as gardeners, we are just stewards of the land for a limited time, we can make a little bit of a difference, but it's going to be nature at the end of the day that decides where it really wants to go in the future.
Yeah. Here's an interesting email from Margaret, who's in Cambridge, Wisconsin. And she asks, well, if robots or computers are growing or making our food, is a garden still a garden if a human isn't kind of tending it?
Oh, that's a good question, Margaret. It's funny enough. I mean, I do sort of highlight this in the book, but I think a garden will always be a garden, because I think at the end of the day, as gardeners, we like getting our hands dirty. You know, we know the benefits of being outside, surrounded by nature, getting our hands in the soil, releasing serotonin in our brain. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that will ever go. I think we'll always be there. We'll always be doing the gardening. I think, you know, yes, we might have a little, I mean, we have robot lawnmowers, obviously, going around clipping our lawns. I think it might be a little few more years yet until we start seeing robots doing the gardening for us. Of course, you know, don't get me wrong, you know, just like the automobile industry, you know, you can have robotic arms coming through, picking plants, pricking them, putting them on into soil or into hydroponics. But when it comes to the general gardener, I think that will always be there, because we just love our green spaces, and it doesn't have to be, you know, a huge garden. It can just be a few pots on a windowsill, or a few pots, you know, on a balcony or a roof garden. It doesn't matter what you do or what you grow, just being able to plant or sow a seed, watching it grow, nurturing it, is something very special. And I think it's sort of analogous to our own lives, in a sense. You know, we're born, we grow, and at the end of it, we die. And, you know, there's something, again, very heartwarming in being able to see this plant and nurturing that plant through. So I think, Margaret, I think don't worry yet. I still think we've got quite a way to go, but I think a garden, it will always be a garden, even if robots do decide to take over the world.
Interesting email from Dennis. Because of his physical limitations, he sold his property. He says he wishes he had thought of letting volunteer gardeners grow food for a charity pantry. Apartment renters might want a garden for food donations. If gardeners' time limitations preclude bigger gardens, property owners might have additional space and allow volunteers to plant multiple rows for donation. These can be teaching opportunities for novices to determine if they want to be gardeners.
I think that's a lovely idea. I mean, we're seeing a lot of that here in the UK, where the elderly population who just are finding gardening just maybe a little bit too tricky, or maybe it's someone with a disability who's finding gardening a little bit tricky, they're opening their gardens up, and they're allowing people to come in and to grow some fruit and veg, or just attend a part of the garden. And, you know, it's like what I said at the beginning, you know, gardening can be done on your own, or it can be a social activity. And, you know, I think it's wonderful that you can allow these people in and they can do that, because, you know, I don't know, do you have allotments in Wisconsin? Do you have allotments?
We have community gardens.
We have allotments, which are just, you know, these patches of land where people can grow their own fruit and veg, etc. But the waiting lists to get on them are huge. I mean, some people can wait 10 years to actually get their own plot. So being able to open up some gardens and sharing that produce, I think, is a lovely sort of social activity to do. And, you know, it brings people together. It helps with isolation as well. It shows the power of plants and gardens.
Carol emailed, this is more maybe a technical type question. Carol emailed to ask, if you use biochar, and if so, what are the pros and cons?
So biochar is brilliant because actually it will add nutrients back into the soil. It will also sort of help sequester carbon as well. So that means, you know, there's less carbon dioxide in the air. It will also, as it breaks down, it will start to help the plant to go in search of nutrients, in search of carbohydrates, sugars, etc., everything that it needs. So it's a wonderful thing to add to your garden. And actually, it's interesting because things like biochar and hotbeds have almost been forgotten about, especially here in the UK. And it's only been in the last probably 5 to 10 years that we're starting to see biochar come onto the market. And I'm really pleased to see that because, you know, it has, for organic gardening, it's works brilliantly. And I urge everyone to garden organically because, A, it's better for the environment, but also, you know, it helps wildlife and the natural world in many, many, many ways. So, yeah, I think, you know, biochar is an amazing, amazing thing to use, and we should be using it more. And I hope that as the years go on and people become more aware of it, that they will do.
Yeah, and for those who may not be familiar, biochar is a sort of a black carbon produced from biomass sources.
Yes, exactly.
Wood
yeah,
chips, exactly. Plant residues, manure, other ag waste products.
It's
pretty cool. Well, I know you're interested in space, and your chapter on the growing experiment on the International Space Station I thought was really interesting. Talk about those projects and how these efforts will help us garden into the future.
Well, you know, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, yes, you know, they have grown things like lettuces and beets and what have you on the International Space Station. You've got to remember that on Earth, plants grow by what's known as gravitropism. So in other words, gravity. So therefore, you know, the roots go down and the tips go up. But in space, you don't have that. So they've had to create these special chambers where they can grow plants in them so they know which way is up and which way is down. But also, when you think about sort of being in space, or when you think about sort of space exploration and especially travel, actually doing the act of gardening, and what, you know, that it could be just tending to some lettuces, actually sort of grounds you back in an Earth environment. So it actually gives you that wonderful idea that actually, you know, it links you back to Earth. And I think that's so important. But also we got to remember that, you know, if we do go to Mars or beyond, they're long journeys. So, you know, the astronauts are going to have to be fed. Yes, they can have lots of dry stuff, but it's also really good to have nutritious veggies and maybe fruits that you can grow yourself, which will be even better. And then, of course, you know, you've got to think about sort of what's known as closed loop systems. So things like human poop, etc., will be recycled, so that can then be used as a compost. So it's a very, I think it's a fascinating area because A, you're having to deal with no gravity. B, you're having to think of how you're going to feed these astronauts on these long journeys. C, you know, once you get to somewhere like Mars, which doesn't have many natural resources or an abundance of water, how are we going to feed and water our plants? So that's where the closed loop systems come in. So I think it's an absolutely fascinating point in our history. I hope, and I really hope, that I will see it in our time that, you know, we'll get onto Mars and we'll start growing stuff there. I do remember when my book first came out that someone said to me, well, as a garden designer, you're not going to get many jobs on Mars. And I said, well, no, that's very true, unless it's in some kind of biosphere or something. I think it's a fascinating aspect. And if we can use that as well as an educational tool, which I know they're doing with the International Space Station and schools, where they can sort of dial in and see what's going on, then all the better for it. And again, isn't it wonderful to know that just by sowing a seed and growing something in space can connect us back to Earth?
Oh, you know what? That's a good way to wind up today, Mark. That was so much fun talking with you today. I really appreciate your time today. We didn't get into a tenth of what you cover here in The Future of Gardens, your book, but I hope a lot of people get a chance to read it. And thank you very much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Mark Lane, the author of the book, The Future of Gardens. Mark's a pretty cool guy, and he's an award-winning garden designer, a broadcaster. Of course, he appears on BBC very, very often. Fun talking with him. And it'll be fun talking next to our guest, who is with the University of Wisconsin Arboretum. We're going to talk about native plants, and you can call in with your questions about your own native plants. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on WPR News.